This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Christine Wong. We were invited to attend the Venture 2017 in Los Angeles in July, a global competition for social entrepreneurs. The venture had $1 million in the pot for several social enterprises. Our very own Frida Liu was there to get the scoop on the past, present, and future of entrepreneurship, and she's here in the studio with me providing a little more first-hand context.
She's here in the studio.
Yes, hello. Today we're providing a rundown of the venture, but in order to do that, we have to have an idea of what it was like. So, Frida, what did you think of the aim of the event? Should more multinational companies encourage the entrepreneurial spirit?
So I thought it was really good that they came up with this whole concept of a competition, right, of the best social enterprises around the world. I think not much attention has been given to the whole concept of social enterprises where you are making an impact, you know, to the environment, to the people, or whatever the causes is, whatever the social concerns are, right? And I think also from this competition where 29 countries got together was to see how they could impact their own country, maybe even learn from that and see how they could actually work together. One thing I noticed there were a lot of talk about let's collaborate, but even ideas then that we could actually use here in Malaysia, right? So the best practices, the best of the best getting together.
Yeah, I think it's always really good and also very fun to see budding business potential and for people to interact and kind of feed off each other as well. And you actually got to speak to a lot of entrepreneurs who might become the next big thing. We'll hear a bit now from two finalists for 2017, Robin Liu from First Respond in China and Francois Van Dien Abil from C2C in Spain discussing the competition.
So Robin, tell us a little bit about your business.
Our business is actually working on promote first aid as a social norm in China. Because in China, there's only 1% of the people going to be survived out of hospital for the cardiac arrest. And there's no people actually knowing what to provide the CPRs and the using devices in China. They're not trained well. We don't have device installed in the public facilities, which is causing this phenomenon. And people are afraid to help each other because there's no law protect the people who want to help. So that's why we actually promote the localized training. So we have those in-classroom training. We also have events and activities so you can play to practice. And also we give you the opportunity to practice in field. We provide the service to the events, to the sports, to marathons. So those volunteers being trained and also they practice their skills on field.
How has taking part in the venture helped your business?
I think first of all, it's exposure for us to go outside, not only in China, but actually go outside and connect it with the world. So we can have some knowledge exchange. What we did is good or not. You can have a comparison. And on the other side, it's a good opportunity to learn from venture previous winners or their experiences and their professors to help us to understand what can we improve. And not only the business model, but also how to increase the social impact, how to replicate this business model into different occasions. So it's helpful.
Francois, tell me about your business.
You know that our oceans are full of plastic. We talk a lot about plastic these days because, to give you an idea, there's about 500 pounds of plastic that is being dumped in the ocean every second. Right. And the main cause of death, if you look at all the plastic trash, you know, before bottles, before bags, before plastic bags, before cigarette butts, the main cause of death is what we call the ghost nets. Mm-hmm. So the ghost nets are fishing nets. They're being abandoned, thrown, lost by fishermen at sea. And so what they cause is a this phenomenon called ghost fishing. And these nets become basically death traps for animals and waste, entangling hundreds of thousands of animals every year. And they cause basically these islands of waste that are being created, entangled in, you know, because of the waste. And they're all made of plastic, you know. So it's a very, very resistant plastic that take up to 500 years to disintegrate into microplastic, then entering the food chain, and at the end of the day, ending up in your plate. I live by the sea. I'm a sea fanatic, and I'm conscious of that problem. And I thought, if we can eliminate the biggest cause of death and contamination in the ocean, that'd be a pretty big victory. You know? And so we started working with fishing communities on the coast of Spain and trying to raise awareness with the fishermen, saying, you know, let's do something about this. So we started putting containers in the ports, basically giving them the tools to put the plastic waste. Mm. And today we are taking out about a ton every 2 days. So preventing that from ending up in the ocean or preventing that from going to landfills. Mm. And basically all that plastic is a source of raw material.
How do you think the venture, has helped you? Do you see potential collaborations?
The best thing is probably the networking and this group of great people that we have around and the energy that exists between us all. And you get media coverage as well.
Oh, sounds like a tough competition, but it's all well and good hearing from the applicants. We also need to know about the elements of the ideal winner. So, Frida, what do you think would contribute towards a winning social enterprise?
So when I was listening to all these participants, right, they're all good ideas, right? And they're all already up and running as well. And you think, wow, how do you decide on who wins, right? How do you decide? And it's not easy, right? So just talking to them, I think what happened at the end of the day was that people were looking for how sustainable and how major an impact it could make, and also like how much money they would need to expand it. If it was a little bit too far reaching, also a bit difficult. So I think at the end of the day, they're probably looking at sustainability and the people behind the business. Again, it was, you can see it was tough competition, and they went through many, many rounds before they actually came up with the top five finalists.
Right. I guess you also have to make sure that the goals that they are trying to reach with the money that you will give them are actually possible, right? Mm-hmm. As well, based on the amount. I definitely think that's all very relevant, and we'll see if this year's judges, Adam Brown and Sonal Shah, agree.
I'm here with Adam Brown, one of the judges. So Adam, a little bit about your story, with founder and CEO of Pencils of Promise previously. We'll start with that story first.
In my early 20s as a college student, I did a lot of traveling. And while traveling, I had a habit of asking one child in each country that I went through a very simple question. And that question was, if you could have anything in the world, what would you want most? And I met a young boy begging on the streets in India, and I asked him, and his answer was if he could have anything in the world, he wanted a pencil. And I gave him the pencil that I had with me, and he was just, so happy. And I learned that he had never been to school before, and that, he was one of many, now millions of children, who don't have access to quality education. And ultimately, that really inspired me to dedicate my life to focus on educational opportunities. And eventually, just before my 25th birthday, I put $25 in a bank account in hopes of building one school, initially in Laos. And now it's been about 8 years since, and we've built well over 400 schools across Asia, Africa, and Latin America, and have about 70,000 students in our programs every single day.
Tonight, the finalists, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for a combination of things. So the first thing I'm looking for is a strong team. I believe there's a lot of great ideas out there. We probably all know somebody who said, oh, I thought of that. Somebody else went out and did it. That was my idea. And I don't think ideas belong to any one individual. It's about who can actually go out and execute. So I'm looking for strength of team. I'm also looking for a real business model that can scale, and not just regionally, but eventually globally. So who's going to use this money to create a catalytic change? And then the third part is the depth of the impact. Are they actually materially impacting lives in a positive way and doing so in a way that can be truly sustainable?
That was Adam Brown, and now I'm speaking to Sonal Shah. You've been a judge for the last couple of years, right? Was there any idea or startup which caught your attention the most?
That's a good question. Each year I find inspiring the types of entrepreneurship that comes from the different regions. And I think what I have learned in each of those years is what types of businesses are really important for the regions and for what's coming from the different regions. So I've continued to learn. I love coming to this competition because it allows me to see globally what's happening. Mm. And it's very hard. You either have to seek it out yourself, or you come to something like this competition and you see where some of the best ideas are.
Right. In a while, we'll speak to several of the venture finalists from last year, including last year's winner, to see what this year's finalists had to live up to. Stay tuned to Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong with Frida Liu, and we're talking about the Venture 2017 that took place in Los Angeles last month. Earlier, you heard finalists Robin Liu from First Respond and Francois Van Den Abiel from C2C, as well as judges Adam Brown and Sonal Shah. Just for a bit of context, this is the third year that the venture has taken place. Frida, was this the first time you attended, and how did you find it in comparison to other similar events?
Okay, so this is, yes, the first time I've attended, and this is the third year, as you mentioned, doing it, the first time Malaysians participated.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very interesting. Of course, you're rooting and hoping that Malaysia will win, and they got some money from some voting process earlier on. So they had to present in front of the judges, right? And we're talking like even with celebrity judges and all that, and it was lots of people watching. You've got 5 minutes to present. It was high intensity. I pity the first person, right?
Yeah.
It's always the first person, and then of course the last person building up to
exactly.
that. But it was very well organized, and you also got into the excitement of what was going to happen, and the judging process was quite quick. But I think, you know, it was definitely a different kind of event.
Right, I see. Kind of talking about the fact that this has been the third year running, and thinking about the past, you actually managed to talk to one of last year's top five, Or Redskin from Eye Control in Israel, as well as last year's winner, Oscar Mendez from Conceptos Plásticos in Colombia. And you guys talked a bit about what this year's applicants were up against.
I'm here with Or Redskin from Eye Control. Tell us a little bit about Eye Control. I understand this is a cheap mobile and a screen-free communication device that allows locked-in ALS patients to communicate anytime, anywhere. But in your words...
Right. So Eye Control is a communication device for ALS patients and other people, patients who cannot communicate with their environment, and they communicate with eyes movement. The idea of the device was to change the way patients communicate today. Usually they communicate with like the same as computers. They control those computers with their eyes movement, so that every time they have to calibrate to the computer, they have to open the screen and calibrate to it. In many situations, they are not able to communicate. For example, waking up in the middle of the night, they want to start to communicate, but they can't really communicate because they need to bring the computer, etc. The idea of Eye Control is we developed a wearable device without any screen at all, so that the patient has an audio feedback instead of the visual feedback of the screen. You can imagine kind of a Siri, let's say, of Apple, that is being controlled by the movement of the pupil, and the user has an audio feedback. And whenever he wants to communicate or do other gestures, for example, controlling other smart devices, etc., he's choosing, and this is how the or voice or any gesture is going outside.
In terms of the business model, how does that work?
There are some countries today that support the communication devices. When saying that, I mean that they have reimbursement model so that the patient doesn't have to pay at least the full price from his own pocket. So in those countries, the business model is quite clear because they already have the system and the mechanism to sell and those devices, and enabling patients to acquire the devices in a relatively very affordable pricing. And as you said at the beginning, we're aiming to make the Eye Control affordable in the first place so that any patient will be able to afford the device, even if they're not inside a country that does the reimbursement model.
So obviously you received some funding last year as one of the finalists. What did you do with the funding?
So all of the funding went to R&D and product design. Last year we raised, I think, a couple of times, two more times, money to the company. We got the support of the Israeli government a couple of times. And mainly we're still an R&D company, and our goal is to, by the end of the year, present the device in the global conference at Boston.
I'm speaking to Oscar Andres Mendez from Conceptos Plásticos Colombia, and he was the winner for last year's The Venture. And I just wanted to ask you, Oscar, can you tell us a little bit about your business?
Yes, what we do is to take sometimes difficult disposed plastic waste, and transform it in construction systems. But always with social impact involved. So now we say that we close the loop of plastic with social impact.
How big is this issue in Colombia?
Wow, in Colombia, we are just in my city. I live in Bogota, just in my city. We send to landfill maybe 650 tons of plastic per day. And at the same time, we have, I think, 3 million housing shortage. So it is a solution that can fix, can help in both of the problems.
You know, taking part in the venture and winning last year as well, how has that helped your business in terms of the funds and also in terms of the credibility?
I think this is the most important, what you say, credibility. Because before the context, we knocked some doors and in some companies and government, and people say, oh, okay, but not too much. But then I think it's like a global context about social and environmental impact companies. So now in Colombia and in Latin America, people know about Conceptos Plásticos, people know about the work that we are doing and try to help a little bit. Some plastic companies and some other companies started also to push the government to start, I think, to see what they are not saying right now.
And meeting all these social entrepreneurs from around the world, do you see any kind of collaborations possibly happening?
Yes. And it's not just to take my business or their business to my country or to other countries. It's about that you can get advices. Some other participants are a little bit bigger, so you can just call and ask about impact funds, about some help, about day by day you have a lot of things to solve, and you can call your friends and ask about it.
Do you think that your solution is a solution that can work in even developed countries?
I don't know if in developed countries. A lot of people think, and we get some mails talking about an ecological product and sustainable product, but it is a market that maybe we are focused right now in the social issue. We want our solutions going to poor people, but I think it's something to develop.
The funding that you got from last year, what did you do with the funding?
We increase our production capacity. We get more people in the team. We make some laboratory tests that before we didn't have. And now we developed another system. Mm-hmm. So now we have two systems, and in this moment we are changing the process, try to change all the process to make more industrial the process.
Now we'll hear a little more from this year's applicants. This is two of this year's top five, Alvaro Vasquez from Bio Estibas in Colombia and James Steer from iDrop Water in South Africa.
I'm here with Alvaro Vasquez from Bio Estibas out from Colombia. He made it in the top five. Tell us about your business, Alvaro.
The idea is that in the world, the palace, the wooden palace, are the silent killers of all the forests in the world. Believe it or not, 40% of all the wood in the world is dedicated to make pallets. It's not very familiar for everybody, but pallets are very important for moving all kind of products in the world. The world is consuming 2.3 billion pallets per year. On the other hand, since Colombia is a very big flowers producer, we also have a big problem there because from the flowers, they produce a lot of waste from the flower stems. Just around my city, 9,600 tons per month, every month. So that's huge. So at BioEstibas, we have a solution for both these problems at the same time. We take the waste, the flower waste from the flower growers, and we separate the fibers, we dry them, and we compress that waste to create a completely new, disruptive, and ecological palette.
Right, and of course, coming here and meeting 29 other countries, and then, of course, being in the top five, this has also led you to possible opportunities.
A lot, because just in this week, I got 6 invitations to go to their countries to make like a joint venture with them, because they know that the market in their countries is huge and that we already have the technology, the quality, and we know how to do it. So that's a possibility. I hope to be back in 2 weeks here in the States to go to Philadelphia, because an entrepreneur there who is making more than 1 million pallets a year invited me to see what possibilities we have.
And that was Alvaro Vasquez from Bio Estibas in Colombia. And now I'm speaking to James Steer from Eyedrop Water in South Africa. James, tell us a little bit about your solution.
Thank you. Basically, we're trying to change the way that drinking water is bought and sold around the world. We see the huge environmental impact of bottled water and the high price, which means that a lot of people who need safe drinking water can't afford it. And the only alternative for them is to be drinking municipal water or other water sources, which increasingly aren't safe around the world. So we've come up with a really innovative business model and a solution which bridges that gap by providing affordable drinking water through grocery stores that doesn't have a huge environmental impact and is really affordable. So that's our solution. It's an ambitious goal, but to basically tackle the global drinking water challenge.
And we know that, you know, this is a problem around the world, but obviously you saw this from a South African perspective, from where you're from. You know, what are the main issues in South Africa?
So we actually, it's not just a South African approach we've taken. We've intentionally piloted in a number of countries already. So we've got a commercial operation already working in Zimbabwe, where we have a really strong market. We've piloted in Botswana and in Ghana as well. So we've designed the business and we've started with the idea in mind to scale. The South African and African challenges in water are not unique at all. These are global challenges. I mean, you even see it in countries like America now, where, you know, Flint, the lead water crisis there. And I think these are mega trends that are rolling through the whole world. You have aging infrastructure. You have population density and population growth in cities. So we don't see this as something we are tackling for South Africa. We've designed the business in a way that can scale and reach everyone who needs it. It is a global challenge. In my mind, this is going to become one of the most important issues of the next 10 to 20 years. As population keeps growing, water scarcity is going to become an issue. And as that happens, the quality of that water, as there's more demand for drinking in particular, is going to just become critical. So it's a global issue. And that's part of what we're trying to do, is figure out how to scale into countries outside of South Africa, where we're not as familiar with the local environment. So that's our challenge for the next sort of 18 months, is to figure out how to really take our solution and make it a global solution.
Right. How has taking part in the venture helped you? Do you think that will also encourage potential investors and collaborations?
Yeah. I certainly hope it encourages investors. That is something that, as a small business, you grapple with all the time, is raising capital. But the venture has been the most extraordinary experience for us, and I think for everyone. There's something about this competition where it doesn't feel like a competition. We've come out of this process as not 30 competitors, but as 30 really good friends. And so however they've done it, there's a real power to it. And I think a lot of companies, big companies, could learn from this, because the full impact and the value is, it goes far beyond, you know, all the wonderful PR and that. The process in South Africa has helped us enormously. We're a small company, and to get a powerful brand behind us gives us a lot of credibility. And it's a strange sort of side effect or benefit from the process, is that we get taken a lot more seriously now because of all of the coverage we've received and the endorsements we've got. So because of those conversations we need to have, we talk to big companies, big grocery store chains, and so this helps us in all sorts of ways.
All in all, some pretty formidable sounding opponents. Frida, what did you think of the applicants this year?
Really interesting. And it's very funny, we were looking at the top five, and there were some countries that were top five last year as well. You get Colombia, Israel, and all that. All had definitely something to offer, right? And making an impact. And when I was listening to them, you know, I had an idea who was going to win, and I was right. We'll hear about that. And it was, a lot of it is presentation. Mm-hmm. Part of it is presentation, but also what the impact is. And of course, a large part of them are actually, you know, developing countries. We're mm-hmm. Most of them are not first world countries, developed nations. So seeing that, it was very interesting to see, okay, so this is going to make an impact. Could this be something that could be applicable to other countries as well?
Right.
So this is, it was tough competition, mm-hmm. right? I had my favorite, and then of course, but you can see how all had something to, sincerely something to offer.
Right, well, after this, we'll be revealing the winner of the Venture 2017, along with a glimpse of the event's atmosphere. Stay tuned, this is Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Breaking financial matters, BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise. Good morning. I'm Christine Wong with Frida Liu, and today we've been giving you a rundown of the Venture 2017, which is a global competition for entrepreneurs where they can pitch their social enterprises. So far, we've heard from some of the finalists from 2016 and 2017, as well as the judges for this year and last year's winner, Conceptos Plásticos. Before we reveal the winner, we have to give you guys a glimpse of what the atmosphere at the Chivas Venture 2017 in Los Angeles was like, with Halle Berry as a celebrity judge. Frida, before we play the clip, what was the mood of the event like? And also, what do you think of having a celebrity judge at a business-oriented event like this?
Okay, so of course, you know, they make it, there's a red carpet and all that, and they're trying to give more status to the whole idea of social enterprises, right? So, you know, there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of buzz, there's a lot of food, and obviously, you know, some drinks as well. So it was... I definitely can sense the buzz. And the reason Halle Berry was there is because she's actually also a business person and she's coming up with an app.
Okay.
Called the Halleywood.
Oh, that's
so
lovely.
So I don't know if it's been launched, but there's an app and I'm not too sure what it does. But so that was the idea that they got her there as well. Mm. So there were three other judges, together with Alexander Ricard, who is, you know, from the family.
Yes.
And then, and also the heads of the organization. Of course, Halle Berry was there as well. So there was a reason she was there because she's also looking at from a business perspective. And
right.
Of course, it gives a bit more glitz and glamour.
So, Frida, during the press conference, you actually managed to ask the judges a question during the Q&A session. What was it?
I asked about what the judging process was like and if any decisions were made unanimously. Also, I asked what the final decision that they made was.
Ah, sounds great. Now we'll be playing a clip of the answer that the judges gave.
I think when you first walk into the judges' room, you could hear a pin drop because nobody wanted to say anything because everybody looked at each other and were like, we can't pick a winner out of this. And I think as we started to discuss each of the candidates, it started to emerge who people's first top choices were, and then we talked through how we would categorize them. So it was a good, the full 15 minutes was used, and then not only was it picking the winners, but also thinking about how to allocate money. So I think in the first minute or two, it was just nobody wanted to say a word because nobody wanted to make that decision. I think Alex said it clearly. I think the way Neil presented and the clarity by which he is both going to help farmers but also scale his business at the same time, and the fact that that money will help him get contracts that can actually make him fulfill what he can do for farmers.
And now it's time for us to present the winner's announcement for the Venture 2017.
Drum roll.
And, the winner is... Neil, congratulations.
What do you think of the result?
You see, I knew Thailand was going to win. I'm also involved in the venture here in Malaysia and with the judge here. And I remember speaking during the break before they announced the winner and talking to one of the colleagues there. And she said, who do you think is going to win? I said, it's going to be Thailand. He presented his idea really well and a very compelling case of what he's trying to do with the farming situation, rice farming situation in Thailand, you know. And there's been a lot of if you've been following the news as well, the rice farmers have really been impacted, especially with the previous administration. So he's trying to turn things around and move these rice farmers through organic rice farming up the value chain, right? And getting higher yield from this hybrid rice. So it's really good that he managed to get $400,000.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
Expand his venture, you know, because it's $400,000 is a lot. $400,000 is a lot more.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think it really ties into what you were saying about the fact that the winner has to be someone who can bring sustainability to their goals as well. So I think that is a really great example of how that's going to be very useful. We also managed to get a few words from Pithachai Dechkraisat, also known as Neil, as he wanted to be called during the competition.
Thank goodness.
Yes, indeed. From Siam Organic in Thailand. We spoke to him about his successes.
My full name is Pithachai Dechkraisat, and I'm from Thailand.
We'll call him Neil.
And yes, perfect.
And this is Siam Organic.
Yes.
Right. Tell us about your business and why you started it.
Our business is an innovative organic food company with a mission to transform the life of small-scale farmers. And, you know, our core product is Jasmine rice, which is a new variety of rice. But what we actually work is throughout the entire value chain. So we design from the seed breeding to fertilizer to training, organic certification through production, which is owned by the farmers cooperative. So we basically manage the entire value chain in a way that maximizes the farmer's income and better their livelihood. The reason why I started this was, it's really probably a selfish reason. I wanted to be happy in life. You know, and I've got to a point in life where I decided that for me to be truly happy in life is to live life with purpose. And this was my purpose. And it's just one of those things where everything fell into place at the time. And I had the courage, you know, almost 6 years ago now, as an MBS student back then, to tackle this problem. Which is the biggest probably in our country, in Thailand, because we are the world's number one rice exporter and we're very proud of it. Mm. But no one ever mentioned the fact that our farmers are suffering like crazy. So it was just, it was an opportunity and I saw what I call a social business fit. Mm. So when people talk about social business, they ask, is it social or is it business? Mm. Is it for profit or non-profit? I believe a sustainable social business needs to obviously tackle, you have a social problem there, it's very clear, but you need to have a business opportunity. And what I saw in that industry was either people saw that rice is a commodity which is cheap, there's no future. What I saw was rice is actually a raw material which is used for thousands of products, you know, snacks, noodles, pasta. And it's gluten-free. And I saw an opportunity in the gluten-free organic market in the West, which was growing at almost 15% per year for the last 10 years. So, you know, I saw an opportunity in the market, and I learned the market insight and bring this back and decide the supply chain. And I call this a market-driven model. So basically, you know, I felt that the opportunity was there. So I had a little chance of success.
How did you discover Jasmine rice?
Okay. It's actually, we actually didn't discover ourselves. Obviously, I'm not a scientist. But we actually met a rice scientist, you know, all those years ago, who was working on developing many variety of rice through non-GMO method, some of which is like resistant to flooding. And, you know, it's like a research. Yeah. But it's in a lab. Mm-hmm. So he said, hey, we have this project. You know, this rice that I developed, and he said it's like the healthiest rice in the world. And so, you know, I ate it, and I was like, wow, it tastes delicious, you know. And so it's simple for me, it's healthy and delicious. So we actually took his research and tried to implement it in the field with a lot of issues. So actually what turned out was that the rice itself had a lot of problem with diseases. Mm-hmm. And we actually work with the farmer's breeder to rectify this problem, and it took like 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it really, I have to thank the first 25 farmers that joined me on board, took the risk, first year, almost no income. So I actually created a negative impact in the first year because like they grow the rice and the rice die. But they're stuck with me. And it got better and better and better. And now the yield is higher than jasmine.
Right.
So, but, you know, it wasn't easy. But luckily, we also used the know-how because some of these farmers have had more than 30 years of experience. So they're able to understand the characteristic of the rice much better than a scientist, actually, because the scientists never actually go in the field and grow it. So So the farmers have been incredible in this journey in transforming this.
You shared a story yesterday about this farmer, and can you tell me the statistics now?
Yeah, so this particular farmer, her name is Ben Ma. She's 3 years ago, she had $10,000 of debt. She was doing chemical farming, and she had 6 acres of land. Within 3 years, she's paid off all her debt. She's actually made money and doubled her land holding. Her land is now certified organic. But also, more importantly, her 3 children who were working in a factory in Bangkok are now back home on the farm working with her. And this is the kind of story that makes me keep going. That when things get tough and I feel like, you know, there's no solution, this is the kind of people that I think about that keeps me fighting this battle. And, you know, I hope it will inspire other social entrepreneurs to fight their own battle.
Final question. So winner with $400,000 from the venture, what are you going to do with the money?
Yeah, so we're going to use this money to expand the production facility to support our expansion into the U.S. retailer like Walmart. And, you know, when we get there, we'll be able to help up to 20,000 farmers' family, which will help 100,000 lives. And
thank you and congratulations again.
That was our rundown of the Venture 2017, the global competition bringing the best of social enterprises from around the world. Congratulations again to Neil from Siam Organic in Thailand on his win. I'm Christine Wong with Frida Liu, and you're listening to Enterprise on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.